First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're recording this on Sunday morning, New Year's Eve, December 31st, 2023. I'm Larry Rhodes, or DJ Doubter 5, and as usual, we have our co-host Wombat on the line with us. Hello, Wombat.
Hey, I got my beard on. I'm wearing a onesie. I've never been more comfortable in my life.
Beard looks
good. If only I can end every year like this, and yeah, be yeah. No complaints.
You got a little gray coming in there at the bottom there.
Oh, I got a little gray here and a little here. It's really stylish.
Yeah, yeah. We also have a special guest, Dread Pirate Higgs. Welcome.
Thanks for making me special.
Uh-huh.
Nice.
And he's from Western Canada, so he's up early. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religions, religious faith, Pastafarianism, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling you're the only non-believer in your town, well, you're just not. Here in Knoxville, even in the middle of the Bible Belt, we have a group of 1,100 of us. We're the Atheist Society of Knoxville, or ASK, and we'll tell you more about us after the mid-show break, so be sure to stick around. Wombat, what's our topic today?
I want to know about the courts, and I want to sue someone for not being the religion that I am, because if it's against law, God's law, it should be the state's law. And I think all laws should cater to my religion and the exclusion of others. And I also think that my evidence should hold up in courts. So let's talk about my spiritual evidence should hold up in court. And as you, as atheists, you shouldn't be allowed to testify to. But, you know, that's a lot of stuff. That's a lot of stuff to go through. How about we get through some appetizers first?
Swear on the Bible, that's for sure.
True. Let's do some appetizers first. We'll have Dread Pirate Higgs lead us for our new celebratory year, or at least, you know, preliminary, lead into the new year with some noodles.
Awesome. Our newly Lord, who art in a colander, El Dante, be thy noodles. Thy blood be rum, thy sauce be yum, with meat as it is with vegetables. Give us this day our garlic bread, and forgive us our cussing, as we forgive those who cuss against us. And lead us not into ketoism, but deliver us some carbs, for thine are the meatballs, and the noodles, and the sauce, forever and ever.
Amen.
I have 2 points with the prayer. One, is al dente, what is al dente? Could you explain that to me?
It's to the teeth.
To the teeth.
So it's not so soft that they just kind of fall apart, but that there's a texture to taking a bite of your noodles.
Optimal.
Yeah.
It offers a little resistance to the bite.
Yeah.
No one wants soggy noodles, you know? Like they're made for a reason. There's good instruction in there.
And different noodles, of course, have different cooking requirements and time requirements and boiling, because larger noodles will require more time than, you know, spaghetti or spaghettini or whatever.
And this is my second point. A lot of people, when they do the Lord's Prayer, they have a cadence that starts high. Oh, hallowed Father, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. And it just slows down to the point where you're closing your eyes and you're just like, just hurry up so we can eat. Or so we can drive away already. Yeah. I'm ready to take a nap. But I like that you take the opposite way. And I'm not saying everybody has to, but I do like the... Oh, heavenly, and it goes up, and I'm like, I'm ramped up, I'm ready to go. So you have some pretty good skills there.
One of the things that happens in our pastats, which is our feasting meetings, is at the end of the prayer, we all pound the table vigorously.
Really?
In anticipation of digging in.
Nice. With the food already on the table?
Aye.
So like we get the rattles of the forks and everything too?
Yep. And the flagons of beer and grog and all the rest of it.
Good test of good, strong craftsmanship and woodwork too, I imagine.
There you go.
All right, guys, I want to talk about tables real quick. If you're banging on a table, you know, and you break it, that's something that I can sue you for. I can take you to court for that. But the thing is, I can't. How can I prove that you broke my table? I can say, well, look, they banged it. I have this recording where Dredd says he bangs on tables. But I could also say, you know, my God disapproved of the noodly Lord that they were worshiping to. And I can also use that as evidence in court, or can I not? Larry, why can't I, or why can I use spiritual evidence in a courtroom?
Well, that's kind of funny you should ask it that way, because we used to be able to. Back before the witch trials in Massachusetts, we used to be able to use spectral evidence. We used to be able to walk into a court and say, my neighbor, I saw her dancing in the woods with demons. And they would actually have to use that as evidence, you know, against the neighbor. And sometimes they would bring that woman up on witchcraft charges and end up in, you know, killing her, roasting her on a spit. But nowadays we don't do that anymore. Or we live in the age of scientific discoveries and evidence, and we bring that to the court. Scientific evidence is used in court every day. Spiritual evidence, not so much.
Not so much, but not entirely gone either.
Yeah, I think it's pretty much entirely gone. I mean, remember Son of Sam? Didn't he say that God told him to kill those people? And they did not turn him loose because it was God's will. So you can't just go into court and use your religious beliefs or religious claims as evidence in a court of law.
Same with the guy that shot John Lennon, right? He said God made him do it.
Yeah. I was thinking, like, there's people who say, well, I was possessed. Or I was thinking about the lady who drowned her children because she heard the voice of God in her head.
Andrea Yates.
And then they said, okay, well, you hear the voice of God. We're gonna translate that to psychosis. Like, some people will take, you know, a very strong spiritual claim to try to leave or give credence or excuse, like, a really terrible act, but then translate it to something that I find is, like, more palatable to those with scientific inclinations. And I find it's almost gone. It's almost gone to the point where we can just say, hey, you're accountable for your actions. And if you do terrible things, even if you say a spiritual or demon or a supernatural being helped you, it's still not something that's conducive to the society that we want to build. Yeah. And we're going to put you in a box. Right.
We don't really care what your excuse is. Yeah. I consider those defenses the Flip Wilson defense.
The Flip Wilson, what's that?
The devil made me do it.
That guy. But, yeah, so you can't use that as an argument.
But, you know, even though this is, you know, not in court, people still do judge these things on a spectrum, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, in common society, people will still accept claims of, you know, of supernatural influence on behavior and whatnot.
And, right.
You know, try to push it as a legitimate claim in a court.
Right.
And go on ahead, Larry.
We have instances of churches, like I believe there's some in Texas and in Alabama, who want their own police force, who want to be able to enforce their church's laws. Now, their church's laws are built on spiritualism and God belief. So if they're going to enforce those laws, they would be, I would think, that they would accept spectral evidence at that point. You know, if the preacher says that he knows that Sally Mae was cavorting with demons, wouldn't the police force have to enforce his say-so?
Right,
you know,
right.
That's what's really worrying about a church police force like that.
And Larry, I want to add some more. I mean, we brought up the Salem witch trials, but I feel like we can bring up even more recent cases. Like, example, the lady who said the devil made me do it when she was drowning her kids. Or the evolution trials, when it was put on whether or not you can teach science in schools, or do you have to stick to a creationist model? Or even recently, I believe it was just like last year, with the banning or the revocation of Roe versus Wade. And now we have where women can't have control of their bodies because people are under the impression that fetuses have souls and that they don't want them to die. I think it's something that we're very much affected by even today. And until we have a higher standard of evidence, we are going to continue to be affected by this, not just in the spiritual sense, but also in the social sense. There are going to be people who just say, oh, this person wears a red hat. They're evil, you know, and it may not be an established religion, but it's just the impression that people have that congregates into a zeitgeist of like, this is just how we act and behave because this is our culture. This is our tradition, even if it's, and it becomes a dogma that's harmful to other people. Dredd, do you have any examples of like something like that maybe even affecting you?
Myself?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you think about the origin of Pastafarianism was at the Kansas State School Board level, where intelligent design was being introduced as a legitimate science topic.
Yeah,
to be taught in schools. And Bobby Henderson went there in 2005 and said, well, if you're going to teach that, then you have to teach, the Flying Spaghetti Monster as the originator alongside it with equal time and stress. Right. Hey, John Richards.
Hey, John.
Absolutely.
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, what's up, John? John, we're talking about religion in court cases, and the idea that even today we are affected by religion in court. Some examples: Salem witch trial, but even more recently, the banning of abortion in America at the state level or at the federal level. Like the protections that were provided to women taken away under the impression that fetuses might have souls, or at least motivated by people who have that idea who vote in a block. The idea that creationism is still taught at the university level at our state, in the state of Tennessee, you can go to any local university bookshop, textbook shop, pull open a book on biology, and you will see capital C creator more often than not in biology textbooks. And it hurt me to see stuff like that. Because when you have, for example, an education where you understand how unintelligent and how undesigned things are, and then you still and you understand design as an engineer, and then you go to a book that still tries to hop or like sell this terrible narrative, you realize this whole book can't be trusted. It has some good things in it, but it's not because it came from this author. It's because they're pulling the good things from other authors and selling their agenda on top of it. And the fact that that's still being sold to kids who are still trying to learn in a place where they should be able to trust their educators hurts me as a person that loves science and education.
Me too.
And it hurts me as a Pastafarian.
Absolutely. I think it hurts everybody, honestly. It even hurts the Christians, because like now you're just more inhibiting against you're just muddying the waters for everybody, you know. Like everyone benefits from science and not everybody benefits from Christianity.
That's right.
And science should not be determined in a court of law. That's not how science works.
Good point. Science should not be determined.
Science should inform the courts, not dictate what the courts should do.
Well, not
could you elaborate on that?
Not
could you elaborate on?
Sure. Yeah. Science should not be dictated to by courts.
Right.
Because there's a big difference between how these two organizations work. Because I often get involved in conversations like this, because a court of law is somewhere that you make arguments. You make them a case, a mental case, a constructed thought process, an association of ideas, which leads people to think that some cause made this effect. Now, science doesn't work like that.
Right.
Because that effect happened historically in legal terms, and they're trying to unravel what might have caused it. But science is looking forward. If science wants to associate a cause with an effect, we do an investigation. And if that doesn't give us the answer, we do it again tomorrow.
Right.
You know,
yep.
So whereas the legal system is looking backwards, the scientific that is looking forwards. Mm-hmm. And so we do not have to make an argument, a mental association of ideas to determine the truth or otherwise of our propositions, what we have to find is evidence. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't know the difference. They don't know. They don't
they
know
have the convictions.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They don't know the difference between an argument and evidence. Evidence is physical or phenomenal, observable, independent and multiply repeatable observations. And arguments are not necessarily that. Arguments are just mental associations. They are like solving a crossword from ideas. They're not actually relating to the natural realm in the way that science does. So if you were making a case, if you were a prosecutor or a defender in a court of law, you would associate ideas one after another to try and demonstrate the truth of your proposition.
Yeah.
You may, if you're lucky, find some evidence, like a smoking gun, you know, to add to that case, but it's not necessary. I mean, for example, just after 2020, Trump made a lot of legal cases that he'd won the election. There was no evidence for that, so he didn't succeed. But this is the difference between argument, which is a mental activity, an association of ideas, and evidence, which is actual observable stuff.
Physical stuff, not paranormal.
Let's get to Dredd.
Yeah.
Sorry, I have to rant on
well,
that.
just to add to John's point, it in the court, it's more an art of persuasion what you have to say about something is more likely to be the case than your opposition, right? And science, of course, is about evidence that, you know, repeated experiment and all the rest of it. So I take your point. Absolutely, John.
I see court as a deterrent to keep future crimes from happening. And the idea that we publicize and make public the rulings of court is to deter similar crimes from happening. Because I see the court system as we can't bring back the dead, but we can bring justice. We can offer some sort of justice and resolve so that the people who are victimized can, or the survivors can find some sort of solace. And we can hopefully do this publicly to the point where people won't commit the same crime again. But science, the problem with science is it doesn't care about making you feel good. It doesn't care about providing you justice. And if everybody in a room agrees on something, you can still be wrong. And the thing about science is, even when you come to a conclusion, tomorrow you might be wrong about the conclusion, and you're going to use science to figure that out. So it's just this constant uncaring gear that just keeps grinding and trying to find a better system. And it doesn't care about justice, doesn't care about making you happy, doesn't care about right. It just cares about modeling accurately.
And because it's a methodology, it's not a thing, right?
Yes. Oh, Larry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just thought I'd mention that we're coming up on a pretty good anniversary of last legal case that tried to decide stuff like this, which is the Scopes trial in Dayton, Tennessee. It happened in 1925. This is 2023, so a couple more years and we'll be at it, a year and a half, actually. But, I mean, they were actually in the courtroom arguing that the stuff in the Bible was true. That was not the question before them. The question before them was, did Scopes teach evolution in the classroom against the law? Which he did. I mean, the law was wrong at the point. The law, it was a bad law. And he
stood up
against the law. He lost that case. But in the larger sense, religion lost that case. Because after that, there was no more arguing the Bible in a courtroom of law as being the self-evident truth and the supernatural claims.
The people are still encouraged to swear on the Bible that they're telling the truth.
Right.
But nothing but the truth.
You don't have
to. Shortly after the Scopes trial, of course, the federal law changed and banned the teaching of creationism in science lessons.
And that particular decision was overturned later, too.
Yes,
guys, don't don't forget, even 2008, we had around this time the legalization of gay marriage, which was held back on the sanctity of marriage argument from dogmatic Christian people who said they don't deserve to have the same thing that we have based on the fact that our God loves us more than them. and I say, like, there's a lot of instances where laws were wrong because they exist in the interests of helping everybody, right? Like conducting all society. And if your society has different kinds of people in it, you need to have a law that's equally merited for everybody. And it's no point making a law that's only in the interest of one particular dogmatic point of view compared to others if we can establish that there's no harm. Dredd, you have something to comment?
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that you have to remain ever vigilant as well. I mean, because like I say, in 2005, when the Kansas State School Board tried to introduce intelligent design into the science curriculum, it had to be pushed against, you know, by people who objected to that. And it wasn't just something that, you know, would go away on its own by virtue of the law. And we see in the overturning of Roe versus Wade that the courts, you know, change by virtue of the people who sit on them as judges. And that it's a constant battle that, you know, secular minded people have to fight.
I think the way you kill intelligent design is by getting people away. And this is my small little tangent. You get people away from like the big, cool, sexy science topics like wormholes and gravity and all this other stuff that people are like, oh, I love science. I love talking about these big things. And let them talk about the nitty gritty, the really, really complex mechanisms that small things have to do to move from one point of your body to another one. Chemotaxis, right? Cilia, that flagella, things that aren't amazing, but are incredibly complicated, but like can only exist through trial and error over multiple generations, and largely mostly fails. Like when when your white blood cells are trying to find bacteria, they don't find them every single time. And that's how people can get sick. And so like, why is there this system that's keeping us immune that's imperfect, right? It's because it wasn't designed. It's just trying to do its best, as best as it possibly can. And there's going to be holes, and other things will take advantage of that. When you realize how fragile what we're on in terms of like where we're at right now, you realize, oh my gosh, this rickety van that we're all driving through space is that's no designer. And it's up to us to make it better as best as we can by understanding and humility. Go ahead.
Here's a question. If the Bible can be used as evidence in courts of law, why not the Quran?
In some places it is, right? That's the part that's kind of sad.
Just not in America. Not here.
So doesn't that give us a clue? I mean, if opposing spiritual books can be used in different places geographically as evidence, doesn't that tell us that none of them are reliable sources of information?
Yes.
Yes. I'd say
I had actually made that point when after the October 7th pogrom there in Israel was that clearly neither of their respective gods were, you know, showing clear support for either side, because it certainly didn't have any influence on the outcome. That's pretty damning evidence that neither of those thought systems are valid.
I also want to throw out another thing, too. We can use the scientific method on judicial practices as well and learn bad laws that are, you know, ineffective and, if anything, discriminatory, and replace them or change them or get rid of them entirely. Right. And we need to understand that, like, that process is also a scientific process, but it's slow because we when we are wrong about something, there's so much ego invested in it that it takes a lot of political persuasion to get people off the wrong track. And it's not as evidence-driven as science, where it's just, hey, you said this weighed 40 grams. It doesn't weigh 40 grams. Oh, you're right. It weighs 20 grams. Okay, moving on. Like, this is a much slower as you guys had alluded to, an act of persuasion to get people on board with changing a lot of these laws. That's and so the only thing we can do is not muddy the waters. I say get religion out of the door, because what's muddier than that?
Right.
It's interesting, because in the minds of many theists, the legal process is the go-to. They want to argue for their God. They don't want the scientific process of finding it, investigating for evidence, because they haven't got any evidence. So, so they go for the legal process. And is there a God is not a legal question. It's not something that could be decided.
And it's not one you can never get evidence for, right?
Exactly. It's a scientific question. It's like, is there a Loch Ness monster? And you wouldn't go to a court of law and try and argue that. You'd go to Loch Ness and look for it.
Right. We need to take a break. We're getting in the bottom of the hour here. This is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We'll be right back after this short break.
So you ask for my opinion. Well, what is there to say? To be honest and just foolish won't make you want to stay. You gotta go on and get moving, and I can't do that for you. Got so many plans and so much you wanna do. Love is tough, time is rough. Love is tough, time is rough. Rough on me. Well, I see you. Imagery. Well, I don't need your eternity or your meaning to feel free. I just live because I love to, and that's enough, you see. So come preach about morality, that's just human sense to me. Love is tough, time is rough. Love is tough, time is rough. Up on me, on me, on me.
To the second half of the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, and we're on WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Let's take just a moment to talk about the Atheist Society of Knoxville. ASK was founded in 2002. We're in our 21st year, almost 22nd year now. We have over 1,100 members. We have weekly in-person meetings every Tuesday evening in Knoxville's Old City at Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. Look for us inside at the high top tables or if it's pretty weather outside on the deck. You can find us online at Facebook, meetup.com, or at our website, knoxvilleatheist.org. You can just Google Knoxville Atheist for that matter. Just that simple. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and do a search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one. Start one. That's right. Wombat, where do you want to pick up?
I really wanted to point out that the idea that religion comes into play on civil matters is almost non-existent and that everyone plays on a fair playing field. And there's no one better to speak to that than Dread Pirate Higgs. Please explain to me how, as a Pacifarian, you've been treated with nothing but equity and equality in the courtrooms.
Yes, indeed. Well, you know, I think I've mentioned on previous episodes that I do have a lawyer now that's working for me pro bono, trying to convince the Insurance Corporation of British Columbia, which is the institution authorized to produce a government-issued ID, how they've refused thus far to acknowledge either my religion, which is the Pastafarianism, right, and my desire to be photographed while wearing, you know, a tricorn similar to this, or right, other you know, religious headgear such as colanders that other people wear.
And, now, hold on, Dredd. I can't recognize you when you wear that hat. Maybe that's the issue. Like, I can't see what your face is. I can't see your eyes. Right. Maybe that's the government's answer. It's like my facial recognition technology just doesn't work when you put something like that on your head.
You know, and the argument could be made, but they don't actually even make that argument. They, you know, under their own policy, they say we recognize and respect people's religious beliefs. And, you know, so certain religious ideologies are, you know, or persons who represent, particularly as Sikhs or as Hindus, are permitted to wear their turbans. And insofar as those headgear choices do not interfere with facial recognition technology, they're allowed to wear them. Even women with burqas and and chandrus or whatever the other names are for the various kinds of headgear, accommodation is made for them to do so.
Wow.
But the, you know, right down to the BC human rights organization here, they just looked at my argument and said, well, you're a Pastafarian. You guys make fun of other religions and therefore we don't acknowledge your right to exist. So go away. And it's been coming up on 7 years now that we've been fighting this. And like I say, with this lawyer on hand, initially he said that what we should do is go for, you know, under Section 2A of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms in Canada is the freedom to religion and religious expression. And it also includes freedom of conscience. And so he was suggesting that we go under the freedom of conscience thing. And I said, no. Let's argue this on the principle that if you're going to allow one religion institutional privilege, that it should go to anyone who makes a similar claim, regardless of what their religious claims are. I mean, if you're going to give it to one, give it to all. You know, equitably and under the same guidance as under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. So.
Can I make a weird angle at this? You have to buy your license, right? As you're effectively paying like some sort of fee or like transaction, right? It's coming out of your own money. to get this license. I remember when I had prescription sunglasses in high school once, right? And I got my learner's permit there, and I got a picture with my prescription sunglasses on for my learner's permit, my driver's permit. And the lady at the constable's office, I'm trying to help John Richards understand all the terminology, at the police department, transportation depot clerk, she says, "You have to take those glasses off." And I said, "They're prescription." And she's like, "Do you have prescription as part of your permit?" I was like, "Yeah." Then she's like, "Okay, well then, I mean, you're buying your license. If you want your glasses on it, go take it." And I thought in my head, I'm like, that makes perfect sense. I'm buying my own permit license. I have prescription glasses. There's nothing in the code that says they have to not be sunglasses, right?
Yeah.
Let me just move forward. It's my money. I'm deciding it for myself. And this is what I'm going to look like when I walk out the door. It's such a... I'm sorry, you said fact?
In fact... Because you are buying a car driver license, you should have been representing yourself in the garb that you wear to drive a car.
If someone wants to find out what I look like, that's what I would look like, right?
Yeah.
I'm not asking the government to pay for it for me. I'm paying for it myself. So, like, who is at burden to simply just click the camera button and let me walk out the door?
Right.
It's inconvenience for everybody to look like how I look like in my picture. And it's my own money. I don't understand how I shouldn't. The whole point of this is it's not understandable. You can't rationalize it. It's just, you know, obstinance in the worst format. Right.
But
it's so silly because you could just, that clerk was just like, "Oh, it's your prescription. Okay, fine. If that's what you're going to look like and you're paying for it, works for me." Chick walked out the door.
Well, and the same goes for my headgear, right? I mean, what does it matter to them? It doesn't, right? It doesn't, you know, interfere with facial recognition technology. I'm not making a statement about anything to anybody. Mm. And it's my license. Who's going to see it?
It's your money, too.
Other than a police officer, or if I'm showing it for some kind of official reason. It's not like I'm telling everybody they have to wear colanders or tricorns.
And
just as every Sikh or Hindu is representing themselves as a member of their specific religion, and they're not prohibited from taking them off, you know, it's all religion is a matter of choice. And that's what I've tried to establish with these guys who say, well, will allow it as long as your religion says you're not allowed to take it off. And I was like, there is no religion that says that, because all religion is a choice. Whether you're born into it, you have a choice to maintain it. And that ultimately is what it's all about.
Right? Well, maybe by the time you actually get old enough to drive, you can make a choice to leave. But until then, you may not have a choice. And once you're born into a religion, you have to follow their religious dictates as long as their family does. And it's not a choice. And that's, to me, the worst part of it.
Well, in case of, for instance, Hinduism and Sikhism, they all wear bangles. And that's a universal symbol for them in both religions. Wearing a turban or going to the level, I guess, of orthodoxy, right? In those respective religions is what determines whether or not you're going to wear a turban or not.
Yeah. I think we may be in danger of, what would the word be? Androphily or something. I'm making it up, but we're thinking in terms of what men are required to wear or not permitted to.
We all know what's going on in good Iran, point. Right? With the
good
women
point.
Being killed for not.
Indeed.
It's not a choice for you guys, but we have to remember I don't want to say something cheeky, but like the whole idea of religion's never been catering to females to begin with, right?
No.
Right.
And
not in recent ones anyway.
Yeah. Religion has always been a demonstration of a power play, whether it's keeping people from not getting pictures on their driver's license, which has no impact on any other course of their life. Like you are a person that decides what a picture looked like on a car license, not a establishment of like a third party guy. Go ahead, Don.
So here's the thing. In a country, in a Muslim country where women are allowed to drive, that's not all of them, of course. Only recently did Saudi Arabia permit some of their women to drive. But where they are allowed to drive, should they be photographed in a burqa?
Right.
Right. Yeah. The whole idea is just, regardless of the courts, I've always find. So I told you how I see courts. They exist as a way to, as a deterrent, as much as a way to seek resolution and justice, right? But I also see religion as a means to just instill a pecking order of in groups and out groups. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I the things that come of value from religion, like the community aspects, charity, togetherness, family values, they don't belong to religion. They've been co-opted by dogmas from better sources, honestly, and just stamped with their label or their brand and said, well, this is Christian values. Well, there are values before Christianity, right? And I like the assemblage of values that exists there. Well, this is a Christian holiday. I'm pretty sure this holiday existed before you guys came along. It's a lot more fun before we had to sing the same 16 songs over and over again. And I'm tired of hearing those same songs. We need a new soundtrack for Christmas. But regardless of whatever the case is, I would love to see religion understand its place and us as a society put it in that place. So instead of it putting us in places, and I can't think of better examples than the consequences that Dredd's going through, issues that are going on in Muslim dominated countries, issues that are going on in America with Christian right dictating laws and access to healthcare, access to or the privileges that women have over their own bodies, etc. It's a myriad of terrible. Did I pronounce that right, John?
Myriad, yes. Dredd,
you myriad, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. Myriad? Yeah, yeah. Myriad. Okay. It's an assemblage of terrible things. Go ahead.
I want to ask Dredd.
Mm.
What are Pastafarian women encouraged to wear on their heads?
Whatever they wish.
So,
however they, you know, Pastafarian is really, it's about representing your belief system, and you do it in the fashion you find appealing to yourself, and it's a matter of choice. Ultimately. Yes.
So I still want to get back to this burqa-clad woman being photographed for her driving license ID. Because it's not going to look it's not going to make her look like a responsible driver, is it?
Though, here's my other thing, too. What I hate about Pastafarianism when it's being addressed by Christians is that it's always on the framing of, well, you're making fun of my religion.
Right.
Right? And the question that I have is, what do you have anything to do with how I express myself? And why am I always being framed in your perspective? Like, I have my own perspective and it has nothing to do with you. In fact, if all Christians went on a rocket ship and blasted off to Mars tomorrow, I'd still be a Pastafarian, still doing my Pastafarian things. And I would never see you guys again. And I'd still be doing the exact same things. So don't judge me by what you're doing. I'm doing something entirely independent of you. And if it bothers you, that says way more about you than it does about me.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing is that while, you know, Christians say that we're making fun of their religion, they do it in the same breath that they make fun of mine.
Yeah.
You know, they're saying, well, that's a flying spirit. That's ridiculous. How could that possibly be true? And I said, well, I mean, are all your claims like reasonable ones, like virgin birth and, you know, or the Muslim Muhammad flying to heaven on a winged horse? How many of those are out there, I wonder?
Good point. You know,
so like I say, they're saying two things out of their mouth in the same breath, right?
Sometimes, it's the exact same sentence. Like, my silly religion, your silly religion just mocks my religion. Yes. Like, you literally just mocking me at the same time you just said that.
And the thing is, with Pastafarianism, we're open to being wrong. Like, if it could be demonstrated that a flying spaghetti monster didn't do all this stuff, then we would acquiesce and say, okay, well, we get it. Moving on.
Too bad. Moving on. We'll try bacon next.
Contest to the bottom to see who's got the most silly religion. So, but what we wear on our heads is not just a matter of hats, is it? I mean, if you take the Hare Krishna, they've got to have their head shaved, except for sort of a back mohawk thing which ends in a tail that's dyed blonde.
Yeah.
And
so when the rapture happens, God can pull them up.
So I'm wondering what the next step will be in this, you know, control freakery of how we should look when we're on our ID picture.
Right.
Are we going to all have to shave our heads? Are we all going to have to go bald? What about John, beard?
Yeah, John, taking this back to the courtroom, I'm thinking, like, if we have God's law, right, and we understand what he wants and what he doesn't want, and it's explicit in his holy book, right, and it says you have to wear your hair this certain way, or you have to wear a burqa even when you are driving, or you just can't drive, period. Why would you ever be allowed to drive? And there are some states that let women drive. Or there are Pastafarians that want to have their hats on, but Christians don't like it, but we know God's word, right? And it's like, hey, there shouldn't be any other God than my God, right? Why can't I, as a citizen Christian, just sue you in the court and say, you are not respecting what's in my holy book. I'm taking you to court. And because I have God's law, and that's a real thing, why can't that be recognized in a real court?
Well, there you go. I want to get back to Dredd because I haven't seen him for such a long time. Do you ride a motorcycle, Dredd?
I do not, no.
No? Okay. Well,
I know how to, but I don't.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to ask whether Pastafarians wear their tricorn on top of their crash helmet or...
Yeah, no, we're not so foolish as to replace, tested headwear in dangerous situations. Like, for instance, I have to wear a hard hat when I'm up in the oil patch. And I do so when I'm required without argument because I know better than to, people who insist. And it's a BC thing that motorcyclists can wear a turban in place of a helmet. And of course, no one's done any crash test dummy tests on turban.
Just want to get back to like the topic of the show, because we do have a topic on the show, which is court cases, right? The idea that we could have people who are religious that are willing to side table their God rules for the state rules, in my opinion, is sort of an admission in their case that they recognize that their God rules are not actually objective, not absolutely real. And while they may make up a fuss and say, okay, fine, gay people can get married in blue states, or fine, women can get abortions, at least for now, but I'll vote again. The fact that they don't just immediately get up in arms and start suing every single person that gets an abortion, like West Barrow Baptist Church, in my opinion, they are the perfect representation of what their dogma asks of them. They are on the street. They are arguing. They're getting in people's faces. That's what every Christian should be doing. The ones that are more casual and saying, oh, but God loves everybody, they're not reading the book. They're not reading the holy book.
Right.
So I see hypocrites. When a state law comes out and says you can do this sin or you can drink on a Sunday, I find that as an admission in terms of social acceptance that people are recognizing that their God doesn't actually have as much authority and power as compared to real people that are in front of them making laws.
Well said. Yes.
Yes. Perfect.
Mm. Yep. And this makes me wonder, if we acknowledge that God's laws are not fixed, and we must do that because they change, don't they? I mean, quite recently, the Pope has said that it's okay for priests to bless same-sex couples, not to marry them, but to bless them. And but they have to do it as not part of a service, but from their personal authority rather than the authority of the church.
They can bless them on Zoom.
Yes. Wow. So, remote blessing for a minimal charge.
Yes. So there's a flaky example of God's laws are changing.
Well, this is why in Pastafarianism, we don't have the Ten Commandments. We have the eight I'd rather you didn't. Because these things are open to change over time and adjustment as society sees fit, right?
Larry, I'd love to get some final thoughts on you. I think we're getting close to the end of the show, aren't we?
Yeah, well, we've still got another pretty much like 8 minutes, so we got time to go. final thoughts on what? And I gave all my thoughts about this subject right up front.
Larry's been trolling on Facebook. Okay. Hey, Larry, welcome to the show. Yeah. We're talking about court cases today. And the idea that, there used to be a time where you couldn't testify in court if you were an atheist, right? If you guys weren't aware of that in America.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy that's not the case anymore, but there's still the social pressure to seem moral And there's no greater group that have sort of claimed a morality in their own sense than just Christianity. People will often just say, oh, I have godly virtues, or I'm a Christian, when they imply that they're a good person, right, without realizing, like, they're referencing the guy that drowned every single person on the planet in the first chapter of his book, and did some really terrible things even beyond that. Like, he wasn't even done past that. He's like, no, hold my beer. Wait until you get to the next section of my book. When I get to human sacrifices, you'll really, yeah. I'll throw you for a real loop.
Sure.
I would love it if we could recognize that, you know, a secular lifestyle, one that's focused on just humanist values, is actually the more optimal point of view in terms of ethics and morality, because it's more even-handed. Do you think that will ever be a case in court? Can you think you could even use that as a selling point? When people say, hey, I want you to testify or swear to me on this Bible that you won't tell the truth, you'd be like, actually, I'm an atheist. I don't follow those kinds of superstitions anyway. I'm honestly telling you my positions. Let's just move on.
Here's an interesting thing which is related to that, because our Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, recently had to appear before what will be the equivalent, our equivalent of a congressional hearing. And so he had to swear on a book. He did it on the Hindu Gitas.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
In a country which has an established Christian church.
Hmm. Well, I was wondering, like, if I had the opportunity to swear on something, if I could just swear on a newspaper and just say, yeah, I'm pretty sure most of the stuff in here is more factual or research based than any holy book. Yeah. Just give me a newspaper.
And what gets me is, I mean, when they say, I'm a Christian, so, you know, so and so, like, they're not 30,000 different sects of Christianity. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really nail down anything.
Right.
Yeah. My choice would be The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Universe. I'd swear on
there
that.
There you go.
Ah, that's a long and silly book, but sure.
It's Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is the podcast I listen to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Larry, would there be a book that you'd prefer to swear on if you had to do swearing at all?
Well, it would either be A Demon Haunted World by Carl Sagan.
Beautiful.
Or Origin of Species.
Good choice.
Yeah, those would be good choices for sure.
I mean, if it's just based on book recommendations, I would do an Isaac Asimov book called Azazel, which is a really, really... Isaac Asimov, of course, does sci-fi, but he also does fantasy, and those aren't as well known. But his fairy tale fantasies are always... obviously engineered in such a way that they're so meticulous that they may as well be a science. And then there's this weird little demon that can be summoned from the gates of hell that can give you like this monkey paws wish. He can let you walk on water, but it also works on ice. And so like you, and the humidity in the air makes you like levitate unnaturally. So like every single time someone wishes, something terrible happens. And it's always funny meticulous the principles of science get in the way of magic. And as it goes, it's like, hey, I gave you the wish. I tried my best. There's so many fun, weird little things, but it's just a good model to show people how intricate these systems that we rely on are. Yeah. And when we close our mind to magic, we lose the true beauty of science. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, like, if you read this book, you'd actually, even though it's a fantasy book filled with demons and magic,
have a deeper appreciation
of the mechanism. Azazel by Isaac Asimov.
Azazel.
Okay. And yeah, if you get his short book compilation Gold, which is like probably the most popular Isaac Asimov short story compilation, you will get one of his Azazel stories in it. And I guarantee you it's the best short story in that book. It's the one he's most proud of.
Cool.
And then he just made an entire compendium of just short stories for that, just separately. But yeah, that'd be a good, I would swear on that just to say, like, hey, you should read this book. It's a good book. Not good on court of law in the sense that it's a demon, but if you read it, you'd understand, it's actually a pretty nice demon who's just trying his best to help people. Anyway,
the little demon that could.
Yeah. If anything, you know, the Bible has demons in it. So like, what's the problem?
Yeah.
All right.
We should probably start signing out or giving last words.
Yeah.
Right. I'd love to do away with the idea of swearing on things altogether. Like, I'm in a court of law. I should be held to the same standards of perjury or lying in court, regardless of whether I pretend to lie or tell the truth or not. Let's just save ourselves a step, since this is all taxpayer time, and move forward with the court proceedings. They already take long enough as is.
That's absolutely.
Which they're trying to do in Australia, where they still start most council meetings with the Lord's Prayer. And in some areas, they are now saying, we're not going to do that anymore. So progress.
Nice. Yeah. Progress.
So where can we find your stuff, guys?
Well, I guess I'll go first. I'm actually live streaming this today after a long absence on my YouTube channel, which is Mind Pirate, MindPyrate. It is Sunday morning at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and that's where you can find me. Nice. I just wanted to also put in a plug here for a thing that's coming up in June with Richard Dawkins going from Dublin to Iceland on a boat with 152 people, which I'm looking at going in June. So,
oh, cool. Oh wow.
Check it out. It's you can find it on skeptic.com/Dublin2024 if you're interested.
Oh. Yeah, please tell me you're taking a tricorn with you. You're taking a tricorn with you, right? Please.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, good. 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 Yeah. Bring extra. That sounds like a fun time. Great.
Yeah.
You can find myself on YouTube. That's about it. John, go ahead.
If you're looking at cruises with interesting people, there's also one involving A.C. Grayling and I think Lawrence Krauss that's going to Finland, but that's in April.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. So if you want to look at my stuff, I've recently been asked to take over the Atheism UK YouTube channel. So I've now got two channels. Ah. And inspired by an interview that I had back in the summer, so there's a very short video clip from that. I then made 9 more very short interviews about my worldview. And so I'm the executive president of Atheism UK. And can't say it, but I am. And so if you want to go to the Atheism UK YouTube channel, you can see 10 little tiny videos about my thoughts.
Hmm. Nice.
Okay. Very cool.
Wonderful.
And my content, Ty, did you get yours in there?
Yeah, I'll be on YouTube or your local Dollar General, because I'm at the end of the year, which means I've successfully I've kept my commitment to not eat chips or candy for this entire year. And as soon as the clock strikes 12, I'm getting that salt and sugar in. So all catch right. me at your local.
Congratulations.
grocery store.
Yeah. Sorry. Okay. Yeah.
People Lesser can find it. Isn't it? Your evil cat's influence.
It's true.
Yeah. A reminder, you can find this show on podcasts everywhere. Just search for Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. And if you're watching this on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe. My content can be found at digitalfreethought.com. Be sure to click on the blog button for our radio show archives, atheist songs, and many articles on the subject. My YouTube channel handle is @Doubter5. You can find my book, Atheism, What's It All About, on Amazon. Thank you, Dredd. Remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life. And we'll see you next Wednesday night at 7 o'clock here on WOZO Radio. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.